Blog Talk Radio.
The full moonlit nights, an infant cries in the great void of silence before we knew time. A miracle spawned the dawn of life. Hear all the stories of how we came to be. Our legends, myths, and our hero themes that share the secrets of our cosmic seed. Spin round the starlight, oh ancient sun. Spin round until a new day has come. Oh mother and father, where do we come from? Day and night, black and white, the great divide.
Imagined, and I don't know about you, but I can imagine a lot. And I'm joined today all the way from high atop Mount Annandale there, wherever it is, from the Temple of Gaia, joining us, Mr. Kevin Baird.
Thank you. Just another day in paradise.
Absolutely, and a beautiful day it is. And Kevin can be found at www.templeofgaia.com. And as well can be found lurking around the Weemsbot Museum, searching for haunted voices and such with his K2 tester, which I joined him. We have some YouTube footage of that, and that was a lot of fun, trying to communicate with...
And that video is out on Weemsbot Paranormal on YouTube.
Awesome. So if you go to YouTube, it's on the Weemsbot Paranormal. And besides, Weemsbot is just a great sounding name, isn't it?
It's almost like some kind of ancient Civil War robot or something.
You know, the first submarine was in the Civil War, actually. I think the first official submarine. But as well, Kevin is part of a group called Artisans United, and he makes things such as his Gaia Gardens and his paranormal windows. And are they doing any more art shows this year?
They're going to start another one in August, but I'm not going to be around for that one because I'm moving on up to Columbus, Ohio.
To the west side.
Yes, closer to Lake Erie, you know. It's
Wow. So, yes, Kevin Baird will be moving, but will still be part of the Main Street Universe Network. And
I'll be the Midwestern affiliate for the Main Street Universe Network.
That's right, because we are a network now. We used to be one show, this show, the flagship show. Now we are three shows, soon to be four, Brett with his Main Street Hermit show. And we also have on Thursdays Zarayana Radio with Evan Pass. We have an interesting guest coming up, a Kemetic expert. This woman is sort of an expert in the African Kemetic tradition, which is sort of the African-Egyptian connection. I'll let her explain it more. She is a queen mother, a high priestess, and she will be on Evan Pass, his show on Zarayana Radio. So it'll be his first guest, so that'll be nice for him. That'll be coming up in a week or two. And then, of course, we have Kevin's show, Walking on the Sidewalk, A Horizon Oracle Journey. And you were listening to, as we started off the show, a song known as Before Moonlit Nights, right, from Woven Green, Jim and Ashley Cash. We have played a couple of their songs on an episode or two before, and if we could pass the microphone over, I would like to welcome Jim and Ashley Cash of Woven Green.
Hi, Dan. Hi, Kevin. How are you today?
Doing well. Doing well.
Good morning. Good morning. Beautiful. Beautiful morning.
It is. And you can hold it a little closer if you like, but I would say a little sideways, like kind of like this.
Like this?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right at it might get a little that, a little,
I see.
Like you're making an obscene phone call.
Oh, okay. So heavy breathing. Okay, got it.
Breathing. I was trying to avoid the joke.
It's
technically a G-rated show, but whatever.
That's for those of us who don't have
time. Yeah. Yeah, we're not speaking from experience here. This is our obscene call. No, just kidding. Just playing. No, we are a rated E for everyone show, actually, which can be changed at any time. And Nick Barry could not join us again today, but that's okay.
He's out back tomorrow.
Yes, I think he actually might be in New York today. I heard something that he was off to New York. So anyway, back to Woven Green. And let's just go ahead and get the show started. The first thing I would like to do is ask you, of course, where did the band name come from, Woven Green?
That was inspired by a Walt Whitman poem several years ago. I actually have a song called Woven Green. And it was a particular line in the poem that really struck me at a time when I was seeking clarity. And the line, if I can do it justice, I'll try to remember it. There was a child that came forth, fetching to me a handful of grass, asking, "What is this?" And the poet asks, "Well, how can I answer the child? For I know not any more than he does what this handful of stuff is woven. Perhaps it's the handkerchief of the Lord or the flag of my disposition of hopeful green stuff woven." And it struck me as being particularly opening to all sorts of possibilities of how we perceive and define our reality. And in a perfect juxtaposition of having a child at such an early age having such an open view of life without any definitions. So I sort of adopted the name from that and came up with Woven Green as a song title. And then years later, we decided that it would be a great band name.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how that came into manifestation.
I have always disliked and I'm a musician myself, as you know, I've always disliked naming a band. I've never been that fond of naming songs. I love writing songs, and songwriting is what brought me to music in the first place. But the idea of naming it has always been difficult to me.
Yeah, we had a lot of resistance to it at first. We went through, I think, several different band names,
yeah,
didn't we?
Some of them were pretty funny, actually. We had a lot of laughs trying to come up with different things. But it's hard to communicate the depth of what it is that we're trying to express with, like, a one word or two words or maybe three words, but it's very difficult to hone it in. And it's one thing when it's a piece of music, you know, because it gives you a feeling. And then from that feeling, you're able to, okay, pin it down to, you know, giving it a title.
Mm-hmm.
But titling, in our case, it, you know, our music is very much connected with our soul purpose.
Mm-hmm.
So in that case, you know, since we are living from our heart center and we're, you know, putting our music forth as our creative energy, giving it a name was a very, very tricky thing to come up with because it has to represent, for other people, and for us it's one thing, but for other people to very quickly get the right imagery or, well, not necessarily right, but the what we're trying to communicate in mm-hmm. a very clear message. And it's taken several years for us to find, you know, a really comfortable way of communicating who we are, whether it's through design, you know, like graphic design, through, you know, how we present ourselves on the internet and how we present ourselves with our recordings. I mean, music is one thing, but having gone through that process of coming up with a clear transmission in a very short period, sometimes 10 seconds you get to describe, hey, what's your music sound like?
That's funny because I actually came up with, you know, you get so sick of hearing those things from certain rock stars, and they're like, what would you call your music? And they're like, I don't think you can put it into a category. And it's sometimes they're not saying it because just out of arrogance. They're just saying it because sometimes you're just not easily
right.
categorized. So I came up with a paragraph for myself one time, me and my friend, just so that if we were ever interviewed anywhere, I would just say, well, it's a semi-acoustic, sometimes hard, psychedelic, holistic, earthy, digital, space rock. Just like, bam, there it is.
Yeah.
Question.
Yeah, we've had a few of those, too.
It's got to be your elevator pitch.
You know,
right?
That's right.
The thing about the band name, which was interesting, was that, you know, our former bass player, and also my father had originally had the idea of why don't you call it Woven Green? He always really liked the song Woven Green and thought it would be, you know, a good band name. And we sort of at first were like, you know, maybe it was that I'd already named it after a song, so it seemed kind of weird to turn that into a band name. But then we sort of came around to the idea, and the more that we sort of envisioned that name, it started growing on us. And interestingly, you know, over the last several years, the original intention behind the name Woven Green had its roots, you know, through the Walt Whitman poem, and again, this idea of opening to different possibilities and sort of being limitless,
mm-hmm.
and the name sort of has evolved, of course, into the environmental theme or image that you sort of get out of that, and so it's taken on different meanings. And it's interesting because when we talk to people and our fans and people that we meet after the shows. After our shows, and people who like our music, they seem to have their own concept of what that means to them. And so, again, we sort of go back to this sort of opening idea with it, and it's neat to see how that sort of evolved and what that's meant to other people. Yeah.
Okay, and I agree. I always like the idea of I want a name to represent, but I don't want it to be the entire thing. And at the same time, it's almost like, yeah, and when I mentioned how I sometimes disliked the task of naming a project, is I got to the point where as long as it doesn't misrepresent you. So it's like I didn't want to put too much into a name, but I want it to feel right and connected. And I think you were touching on that to a degree.
Absolutely.
And this will take me to my next question, going back. When in the first time, and this is for both of you, when in your life did you first know that music was for you, that you were going to be a musician?
Okay, I guess I'll start with that one. I guess when I was probably 5 years old or so, I was really very frequently running around the house singing, making up songs. And, looking back on it now, it was very much a period, I think, when you're that young, you're not really thinking about what you want to be or anything like that. You just are expressing.
Mm-hmm.
And it might be horribly out of tune. It might be this, really horrible. It doesn't make any sense what you're saying, whatever, but it's still just pure.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started, making noise, I'll call it, when I was really young. But I think it was around fifth grade or so, I started to discover that I was able to actually produce sound pretty well. Like, I think I can sing, So I joined the chorus and I did things like that, and I got involved in stuff with school. And pretty much from there on, I always felt like I needed to sing. And there were periods of time throughout my life where I stopped singing for periods of time, whether it was, in order to focus on other things or whatever. But I've always found that it's a release for me, and that it's just in general at this point in my life that I'm at now, I have to do it. It's actually like part of keeping myself balanced. It's almost like a yoga regime that if I don't make resonant sound, then something's off.
Yeah.
So I'm just following that now, and that's kind of my story for music, but I'm sure Jim has a slightly different story. I don't think he's quite the noisemaker I am. But.
Well, I always grew up in a very musical family. It was always music playing. And my parents had a very eclectic mix of a lot of different music. So I grew up listening to a wide variety of different genres of music. And it was always sort of a celebratory thing. We had a connection with the music on, I think a sort of spiritual level. We weren't, always going to, practicing a religion all the time. So in a sense, I think music was sort of our religion.
Mm-hmm.
but ironically enough, I didn't start playing music until I was 18.
Me too.
Guitar,
about 18 or 19.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
It was. I had no notion or thought of acquiring, an instrument or taking lessons. It was a gift to me. Actually, the guitar was a gift. And for a while, when I just sort of let the guitar hang out on the guitar stand for several months, and it kept sort of calling my name, and I kept feeling this pull to want to play it. And maybe partly out of some guilt, maybe, that it had been given to me and I wasn't taking lessons.
Mm-hmm.
So initially there was sort of, do I want to do that? And then I started taking up lessons, and then soon discovered how much I was beginning to really enjoy it. And then shortly after that, I went off to college out in Arizona. I lived in Mesa, Arizona, and met some really good people who were musicians themselves and had been playing for several years. So when I got involved with them and started playing music with them, I was exposed to writing music and creating music and jamming and opening up, the creative aspect of that. And I was really, really intrigued with that. There was one particular moment when my friend had played me one of his songs, and I was really, really impressed with that creative ability and outlet. And something you know, at that moment struck me within me, you know, this sort of resonance in chord within me that's what I want to do. I want to write music. And so it wasn't long from there when I started writing my own music. And that was sort of the call for me, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then I have a quirky question about that.
Sure.
If you do have a memory of the first song you ever sang in front of anybody, it could be your school class, whatever, do you have a memory of that?
You want me to answer that?
I'm trying to remember. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay.
Closer.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Fifth grade, I sang Haydn Ruslein for my choir in front of the whole school. And it was terrifying, but it was really fun. And it was in German, so it was kind of a big deal. But
did you miss the word?
They might not have.
Nobody noticed, I guess. But what's that? No, actually, I don't even remember it that well. But and thanks for putting me on the spot on that one. Thanks, Kevin. So, Kevin, when did you first start your musical career?
Yeah, she plays a little keyboard.
And I'm sure there was plenty of other songs before that because my brother and I put on plays all the time from, you know, different musicals and stuff in our basement. We, you know, put together whole, you know, elaborate theater productions with sheets and strings and backdrops and everything. So there's plenty of other songs in front of people, but, you know, publicly I'd say it was, you know.
That's cool.
But what about you?
Yeah. Well, you know, I never really was much of a singer. That's why I married you, honey.
Oh,
well. Yay! You just made...
So far as actually singing a song, I can't really recall the first time I ever, you know, I don't have a particularly striking memory of that I can recall. But I do remember playing the first song, and that was really just in front of, you know, way at the time, I think, like I was saying, with some of the friends that I had met out in my college days out in Arizona, we would have sort of, you know, informal gatherings and impromptu parties and jam sessions. So we had a, you know, exposure playing in front of people there. So that was, you know, that was sort of the initiation. And then after that, I think the first time that we ever performed together was at that house party in Great Falls, which was pretty interesting. We had just released just around the corner our first single at the time, and we were selling it at my parents' coffee shop. They owned a coffee shop in Great Falls for about 17 years called Gillette's Coffee. Mm-hmm. And so we were very much staples in the community, and we started selling that CD, and funny enough, people started, you know, really enjoying that song, and which was, you know, sort of unsuspecting. Sometimes you have sort of these preconceived ideas of who's going to, you know, gravitate towards what you're singing about. And here in that community, you know, I think maybe those people needed to hear what that particular message in that song was about, and they resonated with it. So we were started getting invitations to play at house parties.
Cool.
And that was sort of kind of our beginning, really.
That was actually taking me to part of next question, and that was going to be, when did you two first start working together? And then soon, Reverend Scott has joined us, and he may have a question or two for you after that.
Funny enough, when Jim and I first met, actually, we were both anthropology majors in George Mason University, it was cultural anthropology. It's kind of obscure in a way. And we met at a mutual friend's house, and we discovered at that meeting that we were both musicians. So that was kind of an interesting kind of, I suppose, serendipity. But basically, we both knew that each other were musicians, but we weren't really ready to play together for a little while. And I think in some ways that was my personal resistance, because I wanted to date the guy, you know. And I wasn't sure about how that was going to go. I mean, it's one thing to play music with just a friend or whatever, but egos can get involved when you play music with people. And, I had kind of run into that in my previous, experiences. So I held off for a good year before we actually started to play it all together. Maybe not quite that long, but...
Yeah, before we really got serious into it.
We were living together by the time we really started to play music together.
I think it had actually been about 2 years.
It might be 2 years, yeah. So we wanted to, I wanted to establish our relationship first before getting to the point where we could, in my opinion, approach something of that magnitude, because it is a difficult thing to work together. And in our case, it was a good thing because now, we've been married for 7 years and we also have a business that we run together, and we do this band together, and we do our duets together. So we're solid, but
we needed that time to establish a relationship before diving into just being working partners.
Right, exactly.
So much of our time is spent being working partners. We have to balance the relationship aspect of that. To stay in balance, we have to, dedicate time to really getting away from, as much as we enjoy music and running our business together, and it's really a dream, it can also be consuming. And, I think that goes for, everybody. Everybody needs a vacation. But we have to sort of put it all aside and do nothing for a while.
Mm. Yeah. Kevin.
Yeah, I was wondering, it's sort of necessary to keep your day job. It's like your demon that's in your life or something. Help you be inspired about the music you want to create, right?
That's an interesting idea. I wouldn't necessarily call it, a demon per se, because we actually do enjoy teaching music. It's not our ultimate dream, though. Obviously, we would love for Woven Green and our music to flourish and to reach as many people as it can. But we also have to be happy with where we're at here and here and now, and not take for granted the gifts that have been bestowed upon us, and that we have helped create for ourselves by living our bliss as Joseph Campbell.
Well, that's interesting you guys say that. This is Scott now. Because I think what Kevin was getting at is what I like to call the tortured artist effect, the fact that, you keep your day job to pay your bills so you can, you're running into the studio to play music as often as you can. But it sounds like you guys are trying to craft and have crafted a musical life together, even if you might want the balance of it to be more one way or the other. It's interesting. So I have one question related back to something that Ashley was talking about, and you both probably have answers to it. But I just want to know that, when you guys met and you were how old when you met, like 22, 23?
I was actually 20.
20. How are you so wise to know that you're supposed to start a relationship before you're and? That thought would never have crossed my mind. If I would have, met a great singer, I would have been like, come on, we're going to...
Well, but you were 26, I think, right?
Yeah, I was 26, yeah. Yep. She was still so young. I think that for me personally, too, I think that I was always very shy about coming out with my material and songs. So I was hesitant to start diving into that with her right away. And I think that she helped really pull me, out of the closet, so to speak, and get me involved in not being so shy about it, and opening me up to performing, and the joy of what that is. And so, I don't know where I was going to go from there. But
Well, that's important because
being in a band is an amazingly difficult
relationship.
And then you guys are also in a relationship. So I don't know if that cancels each other out.
To be honest with you, Dan, it's very complex, and it's taken us. It's actually been very difficult at times to walk in between all those different relationships, and there has been points where we've found ourselves, you know, having a hard time with members in the band, different manifestations over the years. And then coming to a point where we're like, wait a minute, we didn't marry them. That's right. Wait, we're married to each other. Wait. Okay, hang on. Let's take a break. Let's go out to the mountains for a little while and figure out what we're doing again. And so we're always coming back to center with that, and it's tricky.
And it's another reason, not that a married couple, as you both are, for those of you who just joined us, it's another reason for you two to be mad at have an argument, right? It's like now you can get into artistic arguments on top of everything else.
Married couple can get into.
Just when things are going peaceful, when you thought you're going to have a nice, pleasant day, it's like, you know, I just don't think that song should be on the album. And it's like, this is what you always do. You always do.
Yeah, well, and it's another reason to argue.
That must be a little bit challenging.
Yeah, that is very aptly put. Yeah. I don't think you know the half of it either. But, no, I'm just kidding. Just kidding.
It's
no,
nice.
It is wonderful.
Actually, you know, funny enough, we argue more about getting frustrated. It's really more like when there's just so much intensity that we just kind of take it out on each other. So it's more that than, because we generally come to agreements, you know, about issues or things or, you know, whether it's a song on an album or how are we going to go about this next aspect of the project. So it's usually just when we get super stressed and super intense where there's, like, you know, too many things going on at once that we'll, you know, basically be, like, ready to kill each other. But we never do.
Yes.
You know, and I think also one of the things that we have learned through this process is that it started with us, and it's always about us in a sense. And I don't mean to exclude the other members in the band, but we have had to open ourselves up in new creative ways, such as opening our duet, you know, performance up, and being open to the possibilities of what that can manifest. And it's something that we enjoy doing. And we, of course, we really love all our band members, and we feel like we've really gotten to a great place with the band and finding, you know, the right components and parts and the right people and the right chemistry, and we're excited about what that holds in the future.
Well, that's interesting. And this is Scott again. We're talking to Jim and Ashley from Woven Green. Yeah, we have similar voices. That's why when Dan and I sing together, we don't sound so good together, because he has great pitch, and I know where the neighborhood is. It's about. That's right. No, but I'm wondering. You mentioned your first release, you know, just around the corner, which we're going to be, I think, playing this weekend. Which,
yeah.
And I'm interested in. There's two aspects of your music that intrigue me: your musical influences that inspire you to write a song that goes from 15/8 to 12/8 and other things in between. But so we'll talk about that first. I just where do you draw your musical inspiration from?
Well, you know, so far as is some of the songs that have the odd time signatures, to be honest with you, I get a lot of people who hear that, musicians of course, and they say, "What, God, you must be in a weather report," and yes, and Rush and all that stuff. And yeah, I think that was that I did listen to some of that stuff when I was growing up, but it wasn't anything that I really calculated or mapped or wrote out or mapped out. This is just what sort of came through me, and I never even for a while before I really got into study of music and in depthly in the theory and rhythm and all that stuff. I didn't even know that I was writing in the odd time signatures.
Mm-hmm.
Was a natural thing, and I think that when you can make it natural that and still have it be appealing to your common listener, that you're doing something right.
No, I agree. One of the things that I find with that approach to music, where there's some, it's not just the chord and the singing, but there's some playing and some musical exploration. There's an openness to changing key signatures and to different time signatures. I really find it expansive, I mean, mentally and spiritually, too. I mean, to me, as a player and as a listener, and I hope it's not just because I'm a player, so I know what I'm listening for, but But as a player and as a listener, I just feel it really opens me up instead of the regular 1-4-5 verse chorus done.
Absolutely. And on that note, you know, that I think that I was really getting tired at the time when I started beginning playing music of listening to that same generic, formulaic, shrink wrap, you know, music that we hear so much in the mainstream. And so my goal was to really steer away from that and do something as much as I could original, be as original as possible.
And I would like to clarify that we are going to be playing at some portion of this another song by Woven Green and probably be taken out by another one, that these are the slightly mellower ones I have. I've seen these guys in person, and they are actually very good progressive musicians that play in off-timing, almost like if you would go see like a jazz band, or which reminds me of a joke when you said you weren't sure if you were doing off-timing, you were just doing it. There's a joke that hit the wrong note once, it's a mistake. Hit it three times, it's jazz. Anyway, didn't. Oh, we do have people. I forgot. Anyway, but they really are. These are the slightly more mellow songs we have of their collection. That was the CD I had. But yeah, they're actually a very progressive jam band as well, and they have horns and everything in the full Woven Green project.
Actually, if you want to listen to some of that stuff as you're listening, you know, maybe when you're done with Blog Talk Radio this afternoon, you can go visit our website. Yes, after Main Street Universe Amazingness. If you would like to learn more about us, we're at wovengreenmusic.com, and you can also visit us on Facebook. It's just facebook.com/wovengreen. Throw us a like if you would so like. And
we like that.
Yeah, you can hear our new you can hear our other EP, which has I think 4 songs on it, and we've got lots of videos on YouTube and that type of stuff with live stuff. And we are getting ready to record an album now. So there is plenty more to come, and
very
just thought I'd plug that while you were mentioning
Absolutely. Feel free to plug anything you want while you're here.
So I asked you about your influences with composition, and I'm interested in your influences, Ashley, the way you use your voice. I mean, you have a way of using your voice as an instrument, not just as a vehicle for a lyric. And so what influenced you and inspired you to use your voice in that way?
Well, you know, there's certain artists that have always really stood out to me, and one of them is Eva Cassidy. She has a purity of tone that's really unsurpassed, in my opinion, and a dynamic ability to do anything from a really soft lyrical ballad to, like, blow your socks off, you know, powerhouse.
She was from around here?
She was from around
here, my friend Linda Olson Peoples, who's a minister at the Arlington Church, knew her very well, actually did her memorial service.
Mm-hmm.
And I played in a worship service one time, Where Does the Time Go, if you know that song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, she didn't do much original material. She just took traditional tunes, and she made them her own, and she really did awesome arrangements. She's a fantastic musician and singer. So she was definitely is my number one influence. Also, I did a lot of listening to, like, Janis Joplin and, you know, Grace Slick and that kind of stuff. So, you know, I feel sort of like I have a multiple personality sometimes when it comes to singing because – and it's cool because there's so many different sides of any of us, you know. But when Jim and I do a duet, sometimes we can do a very soft, and I'm just doing kind of harmony and, you know, more of like a feminine, very wispy type of thing. And then, you know, we'll play like a progressive rock song.
Like Labyrinth of the Womb would be an example.
Right, that'd be a good example.
Yeah, that's the one I was going to try or a little later.
Mm-hmm. And then with the band, you know, we'll do something like our song Subatomic Overdrive, which is, you know, very, very heavy and usually kind of freaks people out when we first come out with it. They're like, how is she going to sing over this? And then it's like, oh, whoa, here it is. So it's fun to play with that. And
we enjoy that dynamic.
Yeah, and I will say that I don't know that I would have discovered that in myself, that range of influences, so to speak, if it wasn't for Jim's music, because it really gives, it's just so varied, so dynamic, so many different things that it's a perfect template for someone like me to take, oh, okay, I can sing like this, I can sing like this, I can sing like this. How do I put that together? How do I make that work? Because I started to get very bored with cover songs and like 1-4-5 progressions and just kind of learning these things and doing coffee shop gigs when I was younger. Mm-hmm. And basically when I met Jim and I really started to listen to his material, I was like, holy crap, this stuff is really pretty amazing and it needs to be heard. So I was able to take my voice and play with a lot of what he was doing already. And so, yeah.
And that brings me to my next question. Then we're going to play a song after that and take a little breather here. And it was kind of, you guys have started into what the next question was, and that was the vision of what you see Woven Green Music or, Jim, you know, your solo and Woven Green Music. What is it? And it brings me to another point about message in music, which can be controversial. I've been in bands that where a member would turn around and say, we're not going to do any politics, or we're not going to do this, or we're not going to do that. And what, if you have any criticisms, do you have of people and their opinions on different messages in music, or lack of, perhaps?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I would venture into the lack of, because I think that there's so much music that's really not, there's no meaning behind it, or the meaning is again a prescription that is trying to appeal to what's going to profit, you know, what's going to sell. So it's not really born from the heart in that sense. So I would encourage people to not be afraid of venturing into the, and not be, you know, to just putting themselves out there.
Yeah.
And doing what speaks to them, what really truly speaks to them.
And I think, and this isn't about what the content is. I think sometimes it's about, does the content seem genuine? I'll give you an example. Like, you could take a hard rock band like System of a Down, very political, very topical. I absolutely a huge fan of that band. And maybe once every three albums they write a love song. But that love song seems very genuine because it's from someone that doesn't usually write a love song.
Right.
At the same time, there's some people that write all love songs but come across much more genuine to me. An example, and some could disagree with me, if you want to call them love songs, I was a fan of Amy Winehouse, you know, before she died. And she just seemed genuine. She kind of admits she's a little, you know, rough around the edges. And, you know, she just seemed kind of honest. And her one hit song was You Know That I'm No Good. You know, there was just something more genuine about that approach. So I often wonder if it's just about the genuineness of content.
Sure.
Rather than maybe the content. It's like,
yeah.
One of my favorite albums is Bat Out of Hell by Meatloaf. And it's like one giant love song in a way.
Right.
But outside of those, I tend to like bands that are a little more topical, that talk about things, whether they're spiritual or topical in some way.
Yes.
Even if it's like really kind of eclectic, and you're not exactly sure what it is, but if it seems like what you were saying, not trying to be in a domesticated cookie cutter, we can sell this product format.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we're similar too. We seek out music. We also listen to a lot of instrumental music as well. That's a sort of a whole other thing. But you know, definitely, we enjoy listening to music where there is. Where it's genuine, like you said.
Yeah, like you're just getting a feel that they, like you said earlier, it's coming from the heart. And now I'm going to play a song. This is The Labyrinth of the Womb, I believe. And this is Jim and Ashley, Woven Green, cueing it up now.
One of our quietest pieces.
I am, is that right?
No, it's Jim and Ashley.
Light shimmers in the ripple on the creek, moving here in front of me. Trust here I come, looking for a secret in the secret sanctuary. Thank you.
Labyrinth of the Womb by Woven Green, our guests who are joining us here today. And I guess this one will be.
I think Kevin had an interesting comment about Jim and Ashley Cash and Friends.
Yeah, their music while we were listening to it there reminded me of Aurora Borealis. I don't know if any of you guys have been, like, at least on the lateral longitudinal lines of the planet around Chicago area or whatever, but you can see the Aurora Borealis, and I was getting like shades of blue and a little bit of purple, that kind of stuff, just waving and like looking at the ocean, you know, or the waves coming up on the shore, that kind of stuff. It's moving. You can't really put it into words, and I think that's what music is all about, really.
Really beautiful. That's pretty bold, a man writing a song, Labyrinth of the Womb. I assume you wrote the words to that. You don't have to respond to that if you don't want to. No, I...
People have wild interpretations of that song.
Uh-huh. I'm sure they do. It's good to leave imagination. I mean, that's, again, another place you guys differ from most... pop that we're used to, right? You know, because it's usually pretty clear what people are trying to say, even if we wish they weren't saying it. But I am interested in your content, in your inspiration that makes you write some of your stuff. I mean, I was amazed, you know, when I first expressed some interest of working with you in the context of worship services, that no one had asked you to do that before. And that may say more about the folks you hang with than the right person having heard your music and asking. But I think that the very clear sense of spiritual exploration and search and declaration of a better way of living now that I hear in a lot of your music, you know, is very inspiring, and so I am curious of how you came to write like that, you know, write lines like believing love that will make all things better. So it's interesting.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think I grew up in a very spiritually conscientious family, and though we didn't particularly go into any particular religion, we always had respect for spiritual values and views. And so that was very much a part of my enculturation process. And again, the music, listening to the music, kind of music that we listened to, my parents were huge into John Lennon. When he died, that was very sad for so many people. And I know for them it was very sad. And seeing the effects of how that shook them, I think was very powerful for me at an early age. And I was always listened to music, that had a very, that had a message in it that was where the lyrics were powerful, at least in my opinion. I was very much into the Grateful Dead. Robert Hunter, I think, was a great lyricist. Who often was, overlooked or not really brought to the attention of the people so much. I think a lot of people also thought that Jerry wrote, all the lyrics. But
I've used Ripple in worship most of the morning.
Beautiful, beautiful. That whole album, just, it's like the Holy Grail.
I love that song too.
Those were some of my inspirations lyrically, and then I've had a lot of heroes outside of the music world growing up as well that I identified. So the idea was to sort of fuse this sort of timeless ancient ideas into the music.
Well, it's interesting to hear when I think about the way that I'm inspired to create worship when I listen to your music. It reminds me of the way I'm inspired to create worship when I'm reading, sacred text or good or great poetry. So that's really a compliment.
Wow, that's
Thank you so
much. Yeah. Just to give you a little inside info about, I've known Jim for 10 years now, and, my experience of watching his process to write, has been very interesting, because it seems to be very much, and sorry, I'm just talking about you and you're sitting next to me, but it's interesting to me because it's a processing. We are all constantly bombarded with negative imagery, and it's a very, very challenging time that we're living in. And watching Jim process and turn it into something beautiful and make it always have some glimpse of hope, even if he's highlighting a dark, dark tendency in the human psyche, or there's always this sparkle of hope at the end of the song or the end of the poetry of it. And, for me to get to channel that, because he'll write this piece and it'll be on paper and he'll give me an idea of how to go about singing it, and then I'll take it and I'll feel it and I'll sing it, and it's almost like it's very out of body when it's happening, because it's like I'm receiving some sort of very intense amount of energy, because it's emotional, but it's also like it's like being a conduit, so to speak. And I think watching what with my beliefs that I have, I see that Jim is channeling something from his higher self when he's writing these lyrics, and I am then taking my higher self and putting it into a format so that it can be transmitted. So, it is a deeply spiritual experience to go through the process of having him, get to a point where he's got something he needs to say, go to the meditative space to receive whatever format it is he's going to write it in, whether that's musically or lyrically or both, or sometimes it'll happen simultaneously for him. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's like a big labor, he's got to go out and it's, a very stressful thing to go write the song. Sometimes it's really easy. So, but whenever it is birthed, so to speak, it is usually this magical moment where we're able to sit down together and experience the song for the first time. And that's always really, really great thing. You know, once we get our egos out of the way, you know, because that can be a little, oh, it sounds bad or this isn't blah, 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 you know, whatever. But when you really just open and allow, you know, and then we're able to set the framework of the music between the two of us, you know, my voice, his music, his vision, and then give it to the members that we are playing music with in our band, and allowing them to then channel their creativity through it, it can become a very intense energy in the room when this is happening. So I see it as a blessing to be able to use this creative energy in this way. And, you know, when I'm transmitting what it is that he's writing, I feel very much like I'm channeling something.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's great. I mean, you know, you talked about it being a blessing to open and allow, you know, to try and not be overcome with negativity despite what the world's throwing at you. You talked about being a conduit. I mean, you know, all those things are part of what's in our power if we are, you know, healthy and fed. You know, I mean, you know, I think that we can't change the world necessarily, and we can't necessarily change everything the way we would like to change it or as fast as we would like to change it. But the one thing we do have power over is how are we going to respond to it and what are we going to do about it. And you know, it's nice to see you embracing that and not choosing to have that sort of phony, you know, tortured artist effect that I'm just miserable and the only place that I can write any art that's worth listening to is where I'm miserable. And, you know, I remember there was a crew at the old Maryland Institute College of Art crowd in Baltimore when I lived there that were just convinced that I couldn't be that deep. I've actually had people tell me that before because I'm optimistic and I choose to respond to the world with constructive energy instead of adding to the destructiveness. And he used to just And when they would say that was when I would be filled with destructive energy. But other than that, I normally have a pretty good response to the world because that's the only thing you can do. And it doesn't mean that there's not sorrow and there's not grief and you're not supposed to pay attention to pain. I mean, that is not what that means, you know.
Sure.
Because you have to feel it in its completeness and process it and know how it's changing you. But that doesn't mean that that's what you need to call everyone else to feel and to experience.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And we've discussed ideas about music and all of this, and that's great. Now I want to get down to some nuts and bolts here. The present for Woven Green. What is going on now? What's near future, recent past, present? What are things you guys have that are positive, that are generating?
Well, we have this show.
That's right.
on Sunday.
I thought you meant this one, but that's okay. It still gets a symbol.
Well, right now, that's true.
I'm self-oriented. I can't help it. There we go. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is great.
It's all about the show.
This is great, too, really. And we're really happy to be on Main Street Universe. And listening to the shows here over the last week, we've been really impressed with what you guys are talking about too, and also transmitting, and so yeah, we're very grateful to be here.
The next the very immediate things we have going on tomorrow night. Actually, Jim and I are playing a duet in DC at the Star and Shamrock.
Oh, that's a great place. It's an Irish Jewish deli.
Yeah, it's kind of a fusion of things.
On H Street, right?
Right, H Street. So we've not actually been there before, but it's our first time. But we'd love to see some smiling faces if anyone wants to join us.
H Street corridor has really come back. That used to be the most dangerous place in the city about 30 years ago, and the Playhouse is there. It's wonderful. Dr. Granmore's, this is Belgian pub with the best French fries in the universe, is right down the street. Rock and Roll Hotels. It's a really amazing transformation for DC.
We played Rock and Roll Hotel, I think, last year. That was the last time we were up.
Yeah, it's not far from Union Station, for those of you who know DC. So
we'll figure out how to get there, I promise.
It's not that hard.
So that's Thursday night from 8:30 to 11. And then on Sunday, I guess I'll have you say about that, Scott.
Yes, Sunday, this is Scott, and we are having a worship service. That's right.
Yeah,
for This is July 29th. Yeah, I'm getting there. Just to the Sunday, July 29th at the Old Town Hall in Fairfax at 3999 University Drive, 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. We are having a worship service, and it's called Holy Beloved, The Beauty of Divine Love, and was inspired in part by some of our conversations and the idea that one of your songs is inspired by Rumi, and so I started thinking about the Beloved. And one of the things I think that is most most missed by many people in more traditional and orthodox religions is they confuse the limits that human beings place on divine love with the divine itself. And they've been placed into institutions and into doctrines and into practices, but really, you know, the divine love knows no limit. And for human beings to suggest that is perhaps a great error, which creates a lot of other trouble. So this Sunday, July 29th at 2 p.m. will be the worship service. At 3 p.m., we are having a fundraising concert to benefit Our Daily Bread. We've talked about them on Main Street Universe before. They're a Fairfax-based hunger awareness and direct service organization. And they're what?
They're at
www.odbfairfax.org. That is correct, odbfairfax.org. And this is the first project of Coexist Ministries, which is between my wife's church, UUs of Sterling, and Accotink Church, the place that calls me their minister. And it's nice to take church to town. It's nice to take church to town. But we're all of our money we're trying to raise. My goal is to raise $3,000. And so we've got 150 seats. That's only $20 a pop. I think we should be able to raise twice that. But we raise $3,000, I'll be happy. And so Our Daily Bread is really behind this 100%. Their director, Lisa Wetzel, has helped us get out the word. And so come to Fairfax, hang out, have brunch, come to the worship service, stay for the concert, and then maybe follow us across the street if we still have any gas in the tank, maybe to light up the old fire station number 3 with some music afterwards. So thank you guys for doing that. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, we're happy to be a part of that.
So beyond that, I think I mentioned it earlier, we're getting ready to hit the studio here to actually start recording some of our stuff. We have probably about 3 albums worth of material that we haven't actually yet recorded. We were kind of held up in the recording process. We did our EP, our most recent EP in 2009, and it's been, I guess, what is that, 3 years since then. But it was it's a very expensive thing to embark upon, you know, anything of this magnitude. And we've had some personnel changes in the process, and, you know, we've got a new group of folks, so there's been lots of arranging. We've been playing out live a lot over the last, you know, 3 years. So we're going to take a little time now, and, you know, we're going to continue playing live. We don't have a whole lot of stuff on the calendar at the moment, but our main focus right now is recording, because we just really are dying to get this stuff out. It needs to be shared, and, you know, every show we play, there's people who want to hear more, and, you know, we just want to be able to give them a CD. So that is our, you know, number one priority, and, you know, so hopefully that will be not too far in the future.
I was switching because I think that one's stronger.
Okay.
I wasn't sure. Hello? Check. Okay. So my next question is about how do you view fame itself and a couple aspects of it? Do you desire it? Is it a destroyer? And do you think that if it is destructive, does it often, because it involves a sort of outcast person, maybe not totally outcast, but maybe someone that wasn't, you know, quarterback of the football team and all that, now suddenly receiving applause and approval? Do you think that sometimes when we're talking about the lifestyle of the musician and how so oftentimes there's that tendency for them to live destructive lives, especially ones that take it on full on, do you think maybe that plays a part? Is something about this whole fame thing and this whole idea of being seen and applauded for when maybe you weren't somebody that was accepted, even though some have been, but go ahead.
Well, I think, you know, in general, I think that the idea of fame can be a little bit of a misperception, or it's a construct of the mind, really. And it's the problem that I have with thinking about it is that it creates a separation between yourself and other people. Mm-hmm. Like either whether it's a value judgment of, okay, well, I am clearly better than this, these people who aren't famous or whatever. It the separation that it creates between audience and performer and all these things is really, it's of the mind. I don't really think it's real. So in the sense that, you know, we, if you want to live genuinely, and in our case, we want to live our art, we want to play our music, however it manifests is what needs to be the case. You know, we are in full faith of that and trust for that. So if that means that lots of people hear it and lots of people would look at us and say, oh, you know, you guys are famous. You guys are going to be famous. People say that stuff a lot. You guys are going to be famous. You know, it's not something that our egos desire to have that gratification, or at least myself. I speak for myself. But I want to know that our music is being shared because I do believe that it heightens people's awareness, or it can help people's consciousness. And if not, that's cool too. But so I just think it's an illusion in a sense. So I'm sure Jim has stuff to say about this too.
Get paid.
Well, that is nice. Yeah, considering how little you know, struggling artists do get paid. And I think also, you know, for us, sure. I think every artist or anybody who's pursuing, you know, art or getting a message out or trying to be a boon to the community, into society, wants to have some validation that they're doing the right thing, of course, and that they're affecting people and enriching lives. So on that level, yes, we do want that validation. Mm-hmm. But fame is sort of a whole other thing, and I think it's very much, as she was saying, sort of an ego construct. And I think there's in general too much of that. It's in the fabric of so much of our acculturation process in society. We're constantly competing against each other at any expense, and you can see this, you know, in so many different facets, politically through our corporate mentality and the sort of runaway capitalistic idea that, you know, competition at any cost, you know, profit at somebody else's expense. And I think that we need to be thinking very, very differently in order to really, you know, help the planet and help people, all people.
I have something real quick. I'm going to use the again. I have, I invite people to consider looking at fame as a well that has been dug by you all with your music. You've started with your first note in composition, which is like the first push of the blade into the earth. And now you've dug this well that is a water source for people who are around you looking for some kind of sustenance. So it's not really a fame thing. It's really more of how you are served and how you are liked. It might be that your water is higher on the mountain, you know, it's where more people can see it. It takes a little more effort to walk up to get to it, that kind of stuff as well. With my Horizon Oracle deck, it is a source that people can go to realize things that are unique to me, just like you with your woven green and everything else. So I invite people to really look at the fame as a bubble that's really a connection to the other people that are drawn to the sphere of your experience and existence.
Wow, that's really beautiful. That is very interesting.
Can we get a reading?
you can.
Maybe I have to stop it. Sure.
Oh, no, I just was going to say that I believe, like many things, you know, the notion that somehow just because you become successful and people recognize what you're doing as being of worth and they want to maybe pay you to do it and invite you to do it in more places more often doesn't mean that what you were doing is not of great value. I mean, you know, that's another one of those fallacies, you know, that I remember the whole – you know, the whole, what I used to call the drunken punk rock scene in Baltimore, they never wanted, they would, like, shun being too popular, right? Because, you know, that meant that maybe there was something that wasn't quite as good about their music, and I think it's just ridiculous. Just an excuse to keep yourself down. And so the idea of folks being successful and ending up having the power that kind of attraction brings, people can do great things with it. The most obvious example to me is someone like Peter Gabriel, who besides being a very spiritual writer, is someone who has funded research on bonobo apes to try and see if they can create music. And actually they did. He actually wrote a song using a melody that they created. And so, I mean, so, you know, it's what you do with what you're given that counts, you know.
Right.
Absolutely.
And I think the room agrees. And there's a difference between doing what you love for a living and sharing it with people and doing what she said, creating this ego construct of going, look at me, I'm up here and you're down there, and yeah. Making a living is just, hey, I'm making, like, mine isn't particularly greedy. I would just, if I would say in my life, it's more about doing my artistic things that I'd love to do and then just feeling like I'm comfortably supporting myself doing so, you know, and then being able to travel and do the fun things that I want to do,
yeah.
More so than, you know, oh, I've got a $20,000 vase on the table. Look at that. You know, I mean, I don't really desire those things. I desire experience. I'd break it anyway. But I desire the experiences. That's what I desire, almost like a little that leftover gypsy thing where I desire the travel and the experiences and the living life, and those are the things that I love. And that'll take us down to our last few questions. I could keep it going on, but we're getting down to about 20. Oh, we are. That's what I'm saying. We're getting down to about 20 minutes. We're going to just kind of wrap it up a little bit. She already answered the one question. I was going to say, what do you see for the future? And she said right early on, one of the first things she said, I think, was, I'll always do this. And so I guess there's going to be a future for Woven Green.
I'm 50 years old.
That's right. Scott is 50, and he's still playing. I'm 41. And that'll take me to a comment about music and spirituality. They say that the very first thing that ever existed was a note, the om. And some people listening may or may not know that they actually stand for seasons. Ah is spring, o is summer, m is autumn, and silence is winter. So it's aum, and then the silence is winter, representing the four seasons. And then all things were created from sound. And now they talk about things in quantum physics like string theory and all of this. And we could honestly take these conversations for another hour and a half if I keep going.
Yes.
With the with the people in this room, the paid-for time is...
Quantum,
yeah.
A song
we need
about,
to talk about
quantum physics. Yeah.
Yes. And I definitely...
Subatomic Overdrive is about quantum physics.
I definitely welcome you guys back. That's my order in the court symbol there. When you got a bunch of rowdy musicians and Kevin over there causing trouble, which reminds me now, let's go ahead and let's get to a reading.
You need a space to put this card down.
No, I'm okay. I'd also like to ask you guys real quick before I get into what the cards have to... tell you,
sure.
Is people listening who might be on the brink of wanting to take the step that you guys have, what would be like their prescription, if you will, to help them take that step, you know, that shot of courage, if you will, whether it's tequila, JD, you know, espresso or something from, yeah.
You know, you have to stay centered. You have to honor mind, body, and spirit.
And remove limitation.
And remove limitation. Yeah, absolutely. So you have to take care of yourself because it's so easy to get out of balance, especially with all the things that we're bombarded with, whether it be, you know, environmental toxins, the food that we're eating, and just mental health.
So,
psychology.
In a sense, really just clear your field, clear yourself, clear your body. You know, get yourself in a place where you can just do it, because all this other stuff in your head saying you can't is just in your head. You know, you really just have to live who you are.
And it doesn't have to be that you're a musician. You can be an artist. You can be a writer. You can be.
It's always really frustrating. It's always really frustrating to see younger people who. Who are so easily swayed to follow a certain format of living, you know, and it's very linear based, you know, point A to point B, point C, and you know, even when I was going to college, you know, people would look at both of us, I think, experience that, look at us like we're nuts for going into anthropology, you know, because it was so far against
the going.
Oh, yeah,
we would always ask, would you like fries with that?
You know,
we'd
ask people, well, what do you want to, oh, I wish I could do something like that. Well, why not? So what's stopping you? And so that's the question, is what's stopping you from doing that? And all these other voices, the Toltec Indians had a word for that, and it's called metote. And that means the sort of pollution of everybody else's thoughts being imposed on you.
So you've read some Ken Eaglefeather then, I guess.
Michael Ruiz.
Okay.
Sure.
Payments, okay. Then Don Juan Mathis.
Oh, yeah.
Carlos Castaneda, all that.
Castaneda, yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that's what Jesus was talking about with you have to leave your family. I mean, that's what my understanding of when Jesus says you have to leave your mother and father is that there comes a point when the tradition and the thing that the world you're born into, what those things are telling you, you have to leave behind. It doesn't really mean leave your family.
And that's a classic archetype in all mythology.
Sure.
I think Joseph Campbell really illuminated that for us all. You know, the hero's journey, departure, initiation, and return.
Yeah.
And so that's it. I would suggest for those who are following in a similar footstep to read Joseph Campbell's
Hero
with a Thousand Faces and look at some of these ancient archetypes and the idea what Jesus was talking about, like Reverend Scott mentioned, because it's very poignant. And these are you know, ancient and timeless, you know, archetypes. And we need only, you know, open ourselves to that, and that field of a possibility opens up to us.
And I invite people to look at the archetypes as really doorways.
Yes, definitely.
Into experiences of an individual that's known for something, just like I was talking about the well before, to where you dug your well. It's dug into a specific place to where you got the sweet grass that's growing up in the area, or you got the crystals that naturally formed in the ground.
Marty says, excellent read, one of the books.
That we, you know, just it's how you flavor the water, the well, and that's your music. And the same is the way that we present things. So part of, I want to answer to my question too,
sure.
Where I was asking you how you would invite people to step out onto that plateau would be, how can you present an experience to the world?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what would be an inspiration in your experience that you would be presenting? And like Daniel was talking about how in his music and presenting such an experience out there, that's where the real gold is. It's not what's in your pocket. It's really what's in your heart and how you feel about that. My grandmother told me a million years ago, she said, the great memories that you collect in your life are like coins. It's those coins that you will store in the purse that is your heart, and it will be that purse that you will take with you when it is time for your days to end here on the planet. So that's what I've always inspired towards, is to find a way to collect those just amazing memories, store them into the purse that is my heart. And I know one day I'll be able to cash them in, maybe tokens to get on the big subway up to heaven or something like that. But
yeah,
you never know.
You know, we only take out what we brought into this world, and I think that's also really, really important. What do we want to leave this life knowing that we gave back to this world? What did we impart? Did we love? Did we to share our brilliance?
Yeah.
We're all brilliant. We're all beautiful.
All right, back on the planet now. I'll give you guys a quick reading about what you can expect to see. I read for like the next 90 seconds to like the next 90 days out, and we got about 10 minutes left, so I can give you like a quick 3-minute thing, and we can hand it back. So the first card that's up is the Frontier card, and it's associated with the time 12 o'clock. It shows an individual out on some flat plain somewhere. He's been able to rub some sticks together, create a fire, found a hot dog somewhere, and he's trying to make himself lunch. He doesn't have a big pack. All you can see is what he has on that stick, and he's making the best of it. So I would say that you guys have exactly what you need to take yourselves into the next chapter or volume of where your life is going. With the next card that's up it's the advertising card, and it's associated with the time 11:55. And I tie times to the images so that whenever people understand the definition of the image, that whenever they see it on the clock of their car or on a receipt or something like that, that is the message that whatever it is that you're in, the situation that you're in, that you're experiencing or thinking about, the message that comes through as 11:55 or 12 o'clock says that you're on a new frontier, or this is an advertising that you're showing the world of what you can offer, what's being presented, and likewise people, you know, presenting it to you also, if that makes sense. And then one more thing that comes up is the rituals card, and that's associated with the time 11:30, and it shows someone who's working with a mortar and pestle and trying to bring together the elixir and the concoction that can just help them find that center and that place that helps them feel the strongest so they can go out and kick the world's butt, basically, for like the next hour or day or something. With love, exactly.
We know. That's what it was implied. Anyway.
And that's what I have for you guys.
Yeah. Very cool. Thanks for the reading.
As he was doing that, I was pulling up a general card, overall message from the universe. And I think it's actually fitting. It's the Six of Cups, which is a sharing with friends. If you see there's cups there, full flowers of sharing. It often means also possibility of someone from the past that could help in this. And it seems like we've all been making new friends here and to help each other. And it is about, and cups is about emotion and sometimes love, but it's also about artistic endeavors. So if you got, like, to say the Knight of Cups, it's the knight charging forward with this artistic endeavor while still studying it and staring at it. Of course, I don't have that card out right now. But so the Six of Cups, so combined with what Kevin said and with sort of a little help from our friends, is that what, that's what the Six of Cups is telling me. And before we go, a very simple gift I wanted to give you guys to take as a token from the show.
I didn't get a gift, but I came
with it. It is a moss agate, and some people think it is a stone for prosperity and success and endeavors. And, of course, if you have one of those books like the Crystal Bible, I thought maybe you two might have that book. I don't know if you do or not. You seem New Agey enough to have a Crystal Bible at home. I have one, so we can look it up in more detail. I know part of its meaning. Agates have a lot of meaning. So that's a really cool moss agate because it's not all the way green. There's a little. I think it's kind of a pretty stone.
It's almost a little woven.
It's woven green. Hey! That actually was by accident. I did not pick it for that reason. only a cafe Fairfax. Yeah, I thought it was a very attractive stone. You're welcome. You're very welcome. When Evan was here, he got his first episode, he got a copy of Bhagavad Gita. We like to give sort of gifts to our new folks. Kevin gave me a Horizon Oracle deck. So when we get new folks, Brett got some things as well. So I think that'll fix our Six of Cups card as well. And we're going to go ahead, I think, and say our final goodbyes and then time out with a song. And I would like to thank very much Woven Green for joining us today, Tim and Ashley.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure.
Scott,
we hope to do it again sometime.
Yes, I definitely think you guys should come back. And when you do next time, some of your more, I'll download some more of your slightly more jamming out sort of music. I have your mellow duet CD.
Here's one of my.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. And this song, any final words, anybody else?
Don't forget, July 29th, this Sunday, 2 o'clock.
All right. Oh, our website.
Yes, go plug, please.
Wovengreenmusic.com.
Yes.
And wovengreenmusic.com. Peace and blessings to you all.
Yes, and thank you, Marcy Summers. Thank you, Guest 742, Veronica, and all of our regular listeners for listening now and in the future, because remember, our archives can always be listened to, which means that next week you can listen to last week, this week, in the archive section in Main Street Universe. Now, remember that the mysteries and possibilities of the universe are closer to Main Street than you may have ever imagined. And I don't know about you, but I can imagine a lot. Thank you. And blessed be.
Sorry, folks, the other computer was offline. Here's their song.